Today on Annenberg Radio News.
Our whole thing is telling the truth. No matter how gory or how horrible the story is, it has to be told.
The city of Carson celebrates African American History Month. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, February 28th, 2014. I'm Bryony Ng. The state is facing a serious drought, but tonight, here comes the rain. A powerful storm is moving towards Southern California, and one community is preparing to evacuate. Jenna Pittaway brings us this update.
The cities of Glendora and Azusa are evacuating more than 1,000 homes near the Colby Fire burn site ahead of this weekend's storms. Glendora City Manager Chris Jeffers says evacuation is mandatory.
Latest weather reports have indicated that the storm is going to be very intense and carry a lot of water. We can expect in the foothills anywhere up to 5 inches of rain, and at the top of the foothills, they say they could get as much as 8 inches.
That could trigger mud and landslides down the areas burned by the fire last month. Residents needing shelter are being directed to the Crowther Teen Center in Glendora. Jenna Pittaway for Annenberg Radio News.
California Governor Jerry Brown took to Twitter today to say he's running for re-election. USC campaign and election expert Sherry Bibich Jeffy says she's not surprised at the governor's decision. She believes it'll be hard for opponents to go up against him.
Why shouldn't he run for re-election? He's had a pretty good run. His approval ratings are pretty good. He's Jerry Brown. He's challenged by what he sees before him. From everything that I can see, he's having a good old time.
75-year-old Brown says he's prepared and excited to tackle the future challenges that lie before him. Two Republicans have announced that they're running for governor. Neil Khashoggi, a former Treasury official and Laguna Beach millionaire, and Assemblyman Tim Donnelly. Republicans in the California State Senate were unable to expel an L.A. area Democratic senator today. Roderick Wright, who represents the Los Angeles area, was found guilty of perjury and voter fraud last month. Wright is on an indefinite leave of absence until his sentencing in May. The state Senate voted 21-13 along party lines to allow him to keep his seat at least until he's sentenced. For the first time in its 20-year history, the nutrition label on the back of chips and soup cans is getting a makeover. First Lady Michelle Obama held a news conference today to unveil a new design for nutrition labels. Changes include the calorie count being displayed in big bold letters and serving sizes reflecting more realistic eating portions. The First Lady says the change isn't particularly radical, but she believes it's an important step to having people make healthier food choices.
The truth is that too often it's nearly impossible to get the most basic facts about the food we buy for our families. You as a parent and a consumer should be able to walk into a grocery store, pick an item off the shelf, and tell whether it's good for your family.
The FDA says manufacturers will have 2 years to comply with the new label requirements.
Question for the ages, what's going on with my rap pages? Rappers wanna be down, but listen, you got to feel it within your body and your spirit when you listen to the rhythm. Come on, it's the abstract, rulers on the beat, women all around the globe, the world, you gotta follow me. Changing history, categories, different people in the same territories, hip-hop in the form of black IP, so watch it, be mindful of the speakers, please.
Staples will be paying out more than $26 million. That's how much a jury said it owed in an age discrimination lawsuit. A Los Angeles Superior Court jury found Staples discriminated against and harassed former facilities manager Bobby Dean Nickel, who is now 66. Nickel claimed he was the butt of many jokes at staff meetings and was called old coot and old goat. Nickel's lawyers say it's the largest age discrimination lawsuit in Los Angeles legal history. The Academy Awards are on Sunday, and quite literally, the whole world will be watching. Dozens of TV journalists from across the globe were at the Dolby Theatre in Hollywood today, preparing for Sunday's broadcast. Stephanie Case has more.
3 days before the Academy Awards, the Dolby Theatre is buzzing with life. The red carpet is in place, covered in plastic, and workers are setting up life-size golden Oscar statues. For entertainment reporters like Rachel Smith of On the Red Carpet, this is it, the weekend they've been planning for months.
Oscars is the Super Bowl event of entertainment, and it's the longest day of the year for sure, but we look forward to this day, the other 364 days out of the year.
When Smith says it's the longest day of her year, she isn't kidding. She plans to wake up at 12:30 a.m. on Sunday, and will be on air for Good Morning America before sunrise. And then she'll hit the red carpet, a place she calls sheer chaos.
It's blinding, it's deafening. When the stars hit that red carpet, the flashbulbs, there are hundreds of flashbulbs going off simultaneously. The still photographers yelling the name of the nominees. It's just, it's out of control.
Other reporters agree. It's a tough atmosphere. Reporter Lynette Puente is from TV Azteca in Mexico.
The hardest part is to be focused. You are hearing a lot of instructions because you are live, and it's difficult to put all that things together.
Puente says she's been preparing for months, studying up on actors and watching every film. Another international journalist is Elizabeth Cereda from Austria. She says Oscar excitement is high, even overseas.
Considering that a few Austrians have recently won Oscars, like Christoph Waltz and Michael Haneke, they are even more into the Oscars than they used to be.
The live broadcast will start Sunday afternoon. The journalists will be working around the clock until then. Stephanie Case, Annenberg Radio News.
In addition to this week's much-needed rain, Californian lawmakers are helping curb the effects of drought by passing a $700 million package. The plan will provide immediate relief to communities running low on drinking water and to farms where the drought has caused severe unemployment. The plan also seeks to increase penalties for illegally diverting water. The bill passed with an overwhelming majority and now goes to Governor Jerry Brown for his signature. After one of the driest years on record, Southern California is now in for one of the wettest storms in years. The heavy rain should begin tonight and last through Saturday. After that, we'll have cloudy weather with temperatures in the 50s and 60s. February is African American History Month, and in the city of Carson, the occasion is especially symbolic, where African Americans make up a quarter of the population. Victor Figueroa attended the city's celebratory event and watched as residents sang, danced, and spoke in celebration of Black history.
The Carson Black History Month event showcased homegrown talent, as the soulful exuberance of African-American culture washed over the stage and onto the eyes and ears of the audience. In between performances, the program showcased speeches of past Black leaders from the Civil Rights Movement, such as writer and social activist James Baldwin.
When you try to stand up and look the world in the face like you had a right to be here, when you do that without knowing this, the result of it, you have attacked the entire power structure.
And decorating the auditorium offstage were several collections of African-American artifacts. Though the materials are offensive to some, like a movie poster celebrating the KKK and a Confederate flag, one collection owner, David McLucas, said he is not ashamed.
Our whole thing is telling the truth. No matter how gory or how horrible the story is, it has to be told.
And while it's important to remember African-American roots, Carson Mayor Jim Deere clarified that the event isn't simply a celebration of Black history.
The performance tonight, the history that we're celebrating, is the American history. Black history is American history.
Victor Figueroa, Annenberg Radio News.
Today, President Obama announced his My Brother's Keeper initiative. It's an effort to aid young men in California in education and health-related fields. With many boys and young men in California struggling with these issues, many hope money from the campaign will make changes on the local level. Sarah Zahedi reports.
Today at the White House, President Obama spoke to an audience of government officials, pledging $200 million in commitments to programs across the country to help young, at-risk Black and Hispanic men become successful and productive members of society.
At a time when the economy is growing, we've got to make sure that every American shares in that growth, not just a few. And that means guaranteeing every child in America has access to a world-class education. It means creating more jobs and empowering more workers with the skills they need to do those jobs.
In California, young boys and men of color experience the lowest graduation rates and the highest incarceration rates. They are the most likely to be involved in violent crimes. They also have the lowest access to health services. That's why the California Endowment is standing with Obama's My Brother's Keeper initiative. Spokesman Charles Field says the California Endowment is committing $50 million to improve education for these boys and provide them with health care programs.
If we care about the future of our state, if we care about our workforce, if we care about the future of our country, then we have to do a better job at educating these boys and young men so they become productive citizens, because they are ultimately the future of California and the future of America.
80% of Black boys and 60% of Latina boys in California are not reading proficient at the end of third grade. Given these numbers, it's no surprise that only 50 to 60% of these young men graduate from high school. Still, some are not convinced that the My Brother's Keeper initiative will make a major impact. Professor Robert Smith of San Francisco State is a co-author of the Encyclopedia of African American Politics. He says that while it is unlikely that the initiative will make immediate strides with private funds, the president is starting an important conversation.
It's likely to be not so much in what it eventually accomplishes, but as a way for the president to signal that he knows about the problem, that he's not unaware of it, and that he is interested in doing something to address it to the extent that he can.
That's what Obama hopes for. Obama's aides say the My Brother's Keeper initiative may last beyond his presidency, helping young men of color stay on track and become successful in the United States. Sarah Zahedi, Annenberg Radio News.
As February comes to a close, the Venezuelan protests are a little shy of being a month old. The protests remain strong, with hundreds of students rallying in Caracas today to demand the release of some of their fellow protesters who were jailed. Reporter Sam Dawn brings us the story.
Both sides in the clash say the issue is President Nicolas Maduro. Anti-government protesters were prompted to start taking action by, ironically, President Maduro making protesting illegal. Maduro supporters claim the opposition wants to depose the legally elected president. Pomona College professor Miguel Tinker Salas is in Venezuela, where we reached him by phone.
It became obvious from the beginning that this was not a typical protest, but rather a protest aimed at ousting the democratically elected president of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro.
University students started the protests a month ago, but the demonstrations have expanded to include middle-class residents protesting issues such as food shortages and high crime rates. Nora Briseño, the owner of the Santa Ana restaurant Mil Jugos, echoes the concerns of the protesters.
The situation is pretty simple. The people day there are fighting for the basic needs, right? Like security, food on the shelf, simple stuff, right? Nobody likes to get in their house and close the door and take a nap and be awake, somebody waking them up with a gum in your mouth.
Tonight in Los Angeles, Maduro and the government will gain support from several groups, including the Answer Coalition and the Sandinista Front for a National Liberation. Ricardo Moreno, president of the Simón Bolívar Association in Los Angeles, will also be there.
So we are calling today this protest in front of the CNN building as a symbol that the international media and the U.S. media need to get the story straight.
In recent days, the government has reached out to the opposition for a peace conference, sparking hope for a resolution. Regardless of whether they sided with the protesters or with the government, Every one of the people I spoke to deplored the violence and hope it will end soon. Sam Dorn, Annenberg Radio News.
The Pasadena Police Department is facing a lawsuit from protesters. The protesters were among those demonstrating against former Mexican President Vicente Fox during his visit to the Pasadena Civic Center in 2012. Police say the protesters blocked entrances and tried to push into the auditorium. And they say some of the protesters hit police officers. But protesters say their demonstration was peaceful and lawful. Clarence Smith was among those at a news conference today announcing a lawsuit.
Well, it wasn't the people getting in a fight with the police. The police attacked us. I mean, we were there as a peaceful protest, just passing out literature stating why is a criminal, a murderer in our country.
Several of the people who claim they were assaulted by police were arrested during the protest. A Hollywood legend turns 100 tonight. It's been a century since silent film comedian Charlie Chaplin debuted his character, the Tramp. In honor of the anniversary, Chaplin's granddaughters, Dolores and Carmen, will host a screening of two of his films. They'll show A Time for Everything and The Innovators in West Hollywood tonight. Bollywood might be one of India's most recognizable exports, but how does it help other countries better understand India and its culture? Professor Daya Tusu is a professor of international relations at the University of Westminster in London. He was at USC today talking about India's cultural soft power. Could you talk a bit more about how India's culture affects the global community and global culture?
This is a difficult question because, you know, how do you measure effect? It's a big debate in cultural studies and media studies. But I would say there is a sense of India which is to be seen outside India, and that is about it being a country of great diversity of spiritual culture, IT, distinctive popular culture as seen through Bollywood. That's the kind of general impression that one gets of India outside India.
So is it fair to say then that India's culture is becoming more accessible on a global level, but also it's becoming a slightly different thing, it's becoming morphed into other cultures?
I think it's not just other cultures, it's a particular culture, which is really American culture, the dominant popular culture around the world. You know, basically they are not trying to become more like Chinese or more like African, they're trying to become more like Americans. But also I think there is important kind of synergy emerging between Bollywood and Hollywood, in terms of Hollywood money coming into Indian film industry, and perhaps more interestingly, Indian money being invested in big Hollywood productions. A key example would be the film Lincoln, which was actually produced by a big Indian industrial house.
What's more of a likely scenario in the future? Do you think that we're likely to see a dominant culture from a nation that predominates over all the others, or a more hybrid global culture?
I think increasingly what we see is a convergence of cultures, especially if you think about digital cultures. If you think of young people who are using very similar kind of technology, their behaviors are almost identical. It doesn't matter whether Chinese or Indian or African or European or American, they're increasingly doing very similar things. So the convergent culture that is emerging is not just going to be a Western culture. I think that's what is going to be more interesting. It's a hybrid culture which has elements of various cultures. Of course, dominant Western culture is continued to remain dominant for some time to come, but increasingly you have other aspects added to it, whether it's Islamic, Indian, Chinese, African, European, etc.
And just a final question before we wrap up. Obviously, there's a sizable Indian population living in Los Angeles. What do you think their role is in terms of disseminating Indian culture within Los Angeles and across the United States?
I think one major contribution that they could make is really to talk to Hollywood and say to them, come on, guys, wake up to this huge market. I think India is the only country apart from the United States where more than 80% of box office is for domestic cinema. So there's a huge potential for Hollywood to make India-oriented films. And going beyond the rather stereotypical view of India, of spirituality or of, you know, poverty. I think India is much more complicated than that.
That was Professor Dayatasu from the University of Westminster in London, talking about India's culture and the future of global culture. Grill has been a fixture in the Crenshaw district for 20 years. In this sound portrait, we take you into the kitchen of Earl's Grill with head cook Big Will and owner Duan Earl.
Testing, testing. I'm Big Will, Earl's Grill. Been the head cook up here for about 15, 16 years. I ain't playing. Grilling is my specialty, though. Love cooking wood and mesquite and grill. We got some beef chili. We got french fries. We got turkey burgers, beef burgers. Oh, man, the love that we put into it. And then we're cooking it on this grill, too. A lot of places will give you a grill off of, a burger off a flat grill or a boiled hot dog, you know. We split the hot dogs open, put them on the grill. Awesome onions. Nobody can see our dogs and burgers, man. We are off the chart.
My name is Dwayne Earl. My brother and I, we are both the owners of Earl's Grill restaurant. The secret ingredient is paying attention to how you cook. Cook with common sense. There are so many places out there that are good, that are great. Everybody and their mama cooks something good and great. But common sense cooking and some love, people could tell when you don't put love in food. It's not fast food, it's good food fast.
That piece was produced by Andrea Martinez. Romanian movies are well respected by film critics, but relatively unknown to mainstream US audiences. Take the movie Child's Pose. It won the Golden Berlin Bear Award at the 2013 Berlin International Film Festival. It's now playing at the New Art Theatre in West LA. Our film critic, Grace Lim, finds the movie dramatic, tense, and hauntingly realistic.
In yoga, Child's Pose is a soothing and resting position involving kneeling, head bowed to the floor, and arms outstretched alongside the body. But in a Romanian film by the same name, relaxation is the last thing on one's mind. In the very first scene of Child's Pose, two middle-aged women smoke in a living room with sharply drawn makeup, blown-out hairstyles, and slim cigarettes perched between their fingers. They look like aged prostitutes, waiting for their next clients while chatting about cheating boyfriends.
Ție ți se pare normal să n-am acces în casa copilului meu? Eu când ți-am zis să faci doi că unul.
Slowly through the conversation, it's revealed that the heartbreaking man that the woman is complaining about is not her lover. He's her son, who accidentally kills a child in a car accident. This main event brings to the forefront the dysfunctional relationship between Cornelia and Barbu, her son. One of the more disturbing moments of the film is when she comes to massage her son after the accident. Director Colin Peter Netzer uses sound, or the lack of it, to build the tension and uneasy atmosphere of the film. Cornelia wears a rubber glove and rubs the young man's back all the way down to the top of his buttocks. But the image of this act isn't as creepy as the sound of the rubber glove shifting and squeaking as Cornelia moves it across Barbu's skin. The sounds of a car engine as the passengers sit silently, the quietness of a son's apartment as a mother snoops among his things, the sounds of a woman sobbing in the next room. The stress inherent throughout the film is compounded by how Child's Pose was shot with a handheld camera in a cinema verite style. The gritty, realistic feel increases the tension of the story. Quick zooms and jumbled pans make the viewer feel like they are witnesses to a real moment in time, like a voyeur of a secret family drama. All of these technical tools, plot points, and heartfelt acting keep building to an anticlimactic yet releasing end. The movie finishes in an emotional child's pose, with all of the characters surrendered to themselves and to each other, kneeling, heads bowed, arms extended, mother, child, father, son, vulnerable and open. Grace Lim, Annenberg Radio News.
Now it's time to hear the sounds of another place that's uniquely Los Angeles.
Sonic City! Sonic City!
My name is Brent Glanville, and we are here at Grand Central Market in downtown LA at the coffee shop GMB Coffee. We've been here since about mid-June. Probably one of my favorite things about it is that we're like right on the curb. The crowd downtown is great. It's a little bit of everything from the city hall guys, the lawyers, to the hipster kids and the artists in the studios downtown.
Sonic City!
Smoke alarm went off at 9. I woke up, wiped the sleep out of my eye.
If you've ever gotten a parking ticket in LA, you know just how pricey it can be if the meter runs out. Now, two Angelenos are filing a federal lawsuit against the city. Jesus Pimentel and David Welch both had parking fines of about $175 from parking at expired meters. That includes the original ticket, plus late fees and administrative fines. The plaintiffs argue the fines are unconstitutional because they violate laws against excessive fines listed in the Eighth Amendment. That's the same part of the Constitution that outlaws cruel and unusual punishment. If you are on the fence about whether or not to enter the LA Marathon, you missed your chance. Officials say the marathon is now sold out. More than 25,000 people have entered the race. This is the third time in the marathon's 29-year history that it's sold out. Marathon participants will be running from Dodger Stadium to Santa Monica Pier on March 9th. Keep clicking on our website, annenbergradio.org, for more news about South Los Angeles, and remember to follow us on Twitter at Annenberg Radio.
LAPD officers are training, not in cars, but on horses. We'll show you this, how this will affect security in Los Angeles and across the world. And new developments in November's LAX shooting case say the phone systems malfunctioned. We have airport experts share their concern about the communication issue that affected security response time. Plus, a Playa Vista IMAX theater will open in 2015. The project will create hundreds of jobs. We have more on ATVN. Tune in at 6 on Channel 8.1.
Thanks, Camille, for letting us know what's coming up tonight on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. The universe is becoming less of a lonely place. NASA scientists announced today that they've identified 715 new planets. That doubles the number that scientists knew about before. The planets are spread throughout more than 300 distant planetary systems. They were discovered using NASA's Kepler telescope. The telescope spots stars darkening as planets pass in front of them. That's it today. That's it for this Thursday. We had help today from ATVN and JJ Maldonado. Our production assistant is Lexi MacAvinci. Graham Clark produces our arts and culture segment, and the newscast producer is Victor Figueroa. Our executive producer is Catherine Davis. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Bryony Ng.